I'd like to call the meeting to order, please. Good morning, everybody. Could you please call the roll call?
Debbie Barry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And moving right on to the business.
We will move right into the general action items. This morning we have two. The very first one is just the authorization revision to change fund and pay cash fund. Recommended action can be found on the bottom portion of page 5.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next action item is the authorization to submit the request for the ODOT, through ODOT for the repurposed Federal Highway Administration earmark funds. This is something Cleveland Metro Parks was made aware of on Cup 10. I think it had to be submitted. It was by June 15th. And so we worked very diligently as a team when the Special Park District was going on. And Sarah's got a quick guideline of how we put together the package and who the potential partners are. Sarah?
Good morning, everyone. So the repurposed earmark request was to fund items that were also in our Tiger Grant application. We requested money for the Whiskey Island Connector, $1.5 million for that, $480,000 for design funds for the Red Line Greenway, and then $2 million for the Wendy Park Bridge. And this is a kind of new process, and there aren't really a whole lot of parameters that ODOT has set up for it. The repurposed earmarks are those earmarks that were not used greater than 10 years old that the federal government, Federal Highway Administration, these are only federal highway earmarks, said that there can be a kind of reassessment and recommitment of those funds to other projects that are within 50 miles of the original project. So this came down from Federal Highway. ODOT put the kind of call out on June 10th and said all of the proposed repurposings would be due on June 15th. So we quickly put together a request and revised our Tiger Grant application and submit that along with our request. They don't have any details yet of how many requests were made to the district. The district was funneling the request down to Central Office for ODOT. But it is ultimately the state DOTs that will make recommendations to Federal Highway. The last I spoke with District 12 Representative David Short, we should hear something at the end of July, but the requests have to be into FHWA by the end of August.
Any idea how much money is available in the pot for District 12?
District 12 is a little over $17 million. The bulk of that was coming from the ferry service that the port had proposed. That was about half of it. There are some of those funds that are within the repurposing pot that are actually still active projects. So if you deduct those, there's maybe a couple million dollars less. Some of them are completely stalled projects, though.
There are no further questions. That recommended action falls on the on portion of page 7 for the submittal of those grants.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We have a number of recommended actions for RFP 61165B, Valley Parkway Connector Phase 2. This is just the design build portion of it. RFP 6196, automated teller machines, 6198, asphalt parking lot improvements. We use the AZA Co-op for the Garfield Maintenance and Timberlane Stables Metal Roof Coating System. We use the co-op 12504, number 621, data power cooling racks, and then Ohio revised code for the audiovisual additions to the administration building. Those recommended actions are on page 8.
Move the motion.
Second.
All favor?
Aye.
Officers and payrolls.
Resolution 16-07112. The following vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code.
Move the action. Second.
All favor?
Information briefing and policy items. This morning we have with us two employee guests, two grounds maintenance individuals from our South Sugar Reservation. Brian? You're more than welcome to do it wherever you want.
Park me up, I'm Ray Schlesch, park manager for the Sasha Grim Reservation. With me today, just wanted to bring to the new grounds maintenance employees from Sasha Grim Reservation as of November of last year. I just wanted to give you a little bit of background information on why these two guys got the job for Sasha Grim last year. Davey, I'll start with Davey first. Dave was current seasonal for Sasha Grim last year, 1 year seasonal. When I made the move over to Sasha Grin, I mean, I really got to see his skills, I got to see his work ethic, and I got to see how his interaction with the crew as well, which was all very, very good. He brings to the table some experience with trade skills, some carpentry, which has helped us out with re-roofing projects such as at Henry Church Rock Picnic Area. It's been very beneficial. He's also a family man. He's got younger children. They love coming to the park. They love coming to the zoo. We were talking about the Australian exhibit, the crocodile down there. The kids love it. And so all in all, he's been a great choice. He comes with also some management experience, which has helped out with leading seasonal crews. And I'm also looking at future tasks, things down the road. So it's been very beneficial. So that's Davey. As far as Josh is concerned, drew me to Josh is the fact that I didn't get to work with him. He was already gone. His 6 months was already up by the time I got to South Chagrin last year. But for 3 years seasonal, he's worked with South Chagrin and also Natural Resources in the wintertime. And what really helped him was the fact of his reputation. Just talking with the people from Natural Resource, the crew at South Chagrin, had a really good reputation as far as work. He's got a positive attitude. He's very easy to work with, great demeanor. Also, he's got a degree in fish and wildlife management and aquaculture from Hocking, which is great. I got to tell you one thing about him is the fact he may be a little quiet, but you start talking about fish, and he'll open right up to you. But these are the two new grounds guys, good employees, so very happy with them.
Yeah, I just want to thank the Metro Parks for giving me the opportunity because, I mean, I grew up in South Chagrin since I was a little boy, and I mean, I'm familiar with it. I always had fun there. Fished the Shadow Lake since I was, 10, if not younger, but I just want to thank everybody because I love being there, so.
Yeah, I also want to thank everybody because I grew up around the Metro Parks. I fished, hiked all over the place, and mostly on the east side. Thanks for the opportunity.
Welcome. Thank you. The next information item we have is the grant update. We're closing out 2015 and the first half of 2016. Sean, you actually had to give up the clicker.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to give you guys this update. This grant update is going to cover the last 18 months, so it will be all of 2015 and the first half of 2016 through June 30th. So this first picture here is from Monarch Way Station. So we received some money from the Fowler Family Foundation to work with different schools. Each nature center paired up with the school to plant Monarch Way Stations. So this is one Highland Elementary that Jenny McLean worked with in Rock School. So in 2015, I think that we had a pretty great year, almost $5.5 million in other people's money, as Brian likes to call it. So our grants came from a variety of sources. We received 37 different grants in 2015. 10 of them were from new sources, meaning we had never received revenue from that source before. We got money from private foundations, including the Cleveland Foundation, Ken H. Smith Charitable Trust, corporate foundations, ArcelorMittal, Westfield Insurance, State of Ohio, a variety of programs through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, federal programs. Our biggest wins were the CMAQ, which is the Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality, orchestrated by Sarah over there for the Red Line Greenway. That's why we had such a big number on their federal programs. And And then other programs include money the zoo gets through AZA grant programs and money we've gotten through NRPA grant programs. So kind of miscellaneous ones that don't fit in any other categories.
Could you be more specific about the federal programs? I mean, how many of them were there and the amount of the big ones?
The Red Line Greenway was 1.8 million. 2.0, and then the second one was about 900,000 for Valley Parkway. So that's why I had those ones. And then I'll go into some other details, but we did get money through Department of Homeland Security. And then some of the Ohio EPA programs are actually federal money, so there are Section 319 program and such like the stormwater management. I'd like to say that grants span a variety of departments, definitely some through natural resources, outdoor education, projects in specific reservations, trail projects through planning and design, projects through the zoo and through the ranger. So all these applications are definitely collaborations that require input from, a variety of staff members.
One more question. Yep. Is that amount, the 5.7, is that about typical or is this an uptick or a...
2015 was definitely an uptick. So in 2013, we received 4.8 million. Mm-hmm. In 2014, 3.9 million. And then in 2015, it was 5.5 million. So it's pretty consistent around 35 to 37 grants per year. It's just in 2015, we received these large CMAQ ones. And then in 2014, we got that $2 million one for restoration at Acacia. So we've always had one nice, large grant. And
the grants from the state of Ohio for the lakefront, that $14 million
is not included in here. So, I kind of think we differentiate between the different kinds of money that's coming in. So I guess when I'm talking about grants, I'm talking about ones that have an application process, where they're either putting out an RFP or if it's a foundation, they have, submission deadlines, and we're actually putting in an application
with
a budget and then getting an award. So it's not including that, and it's not including individual donations that Karen Cannonberg does, or any sort of like estate dollars or requests or anything that are coming in. So that's all separate from
And then a different question,
yeah.
In these dollars, how many of them, what's the percentage as far as partnering with other entities?
This is all money that Cleveland Metro Parks is the lead organization on.
But were there others involved?
The restoration at the airport, or the Burton Insurance property, that's one that we're working with, the watershed that's over there. So, periodically they're bringing in Euclid Creek watershed, at Acacia, so others will be involved in those as well.
I know we've talked before, sometimes the way the formulas work, you get a better opportunity if you partner.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the idea of not competing, where we can.
And we've done that a handful of times too, like Chagrin River Watershed Partners put in applications to do some restoration at Manikiki. So that application is through them, and the money is not even coming across our books at all, but they're, leading the work. And we've done similar things with Bus Creek Conservancy, Rocky River Watershed Council. So none of those figures are actually even in here because that money is not even crossing our
books. I think that's good enough for our perspectives, man.
Mm-hmm. So the watershed groups are definitely partners of ours. And even in the ones that are our grants, we rely on them a lot to do a lot of the outreach and help with some of the volunteer coordination too, because they already have those networks in the communities.
Yeah, that's a good story to tell.
Mm-hmm. So this is the first half of 2016 through June 30th, just under 900,000 so far. And you can see again that we've been receiving money across the spectrum from private sources as well as state and federal programs. The picture in the background is Eco Explorers. PNC has been a supporter of Eco Explorers through the PNC Foundation for 4 or 5 years now. So that pays for the staff members that coordinate Eco Explorers.
And these grants often come in towards the end of the year.
Probably. Yes, and that's probably a good thing to note. This total probably looks low. All of the OGNR programs, the Clean Ohio Trails, the recreational trails, all all those awards don't come in until the late fall, so a lot of times the total does look smaller at the beginning of the year. And then the land acquisition programs that are bigger dollars, those aren't due and don't come in until the end of the year as well. So hopefully we'll get that number close to our past years. But this does represent 12 different grants so far, and so far we've actually gotten two new sources of funds from both Sherwin-Williams Foundation and the Humanitarian Innovation Fund. So I'm just going to go into details about a few grants that we've gotten over the years just to give some examples. The Brecksville Nature Center Auxiliary Building is our campaign that we've been working on at the end of 2015 into 2016, similar to what we did for Nature Tracks, trying to put together smaller gifts from a variety of foundations to support the new auxiliary building at Brecksville Nature Center. There's a rendering that was done by Planning and Design. So you can see that we've gotten some support from different foundations so far. I think the cool thing about this is we got money from these people for Nature Tracks, and so now they're giving again for Brecksville, so we're hoping that they can be annual gifts from these foundations as they've been giving over the past couple years. We've been looking for outside funds for renovations of the postcard station, so a great gift from the Cleveland Foundation this year, as well as new monies from Sherwin-Williams. And there's a picture of Sherwin-Williams volunteers doing the painting on the Coast Guard station, which we did in May.
Is that Cleveland on top of it?
Yes. That's a painted, yes, it's painted on there.
There was also support from the Burning River Foundation as well. We're waiting, and then they'll have another event as well. And that's in concert with the continuation of facilitating the, and there are other asks that are in right now for the continuation of that restoration.
The Clean Ohio Conservation Fund is through the state of Ohio. It's an annual program that we've been successful with for a number of years. Last year, we received funds to acquire 16.3 acres adjacent to South Chagrin Reservation, known as the Jackson property. So here's a photo of the natural resources on the property, which is one really important requirement to be able to acquire land. Some new sources for us this year has been the Local Government Efficiency Program. I almost said Inefficiency Program. The Local Government Efficiency Program. This is through Ohio Development Services Agency, and basically they offer grant money to organizations to implement Lean Ohio practices, which I know you guys have heard presentations about before. So we received three different awards, one to look at our fleet management process, one to look at seasonal hiring and recruitment, and one to look at our accounts receivable process. We just wrapped up the accounts receivable process about a week ago, and I won't steal Karen's thunder because I know she's going to tell you guys all about it, but I got to be on the team, and it was a really amazing process, and the results were spectacular. So this is just a picture of us working with our consultant at Baldwin Wallace to really transform that accounts receivable process. And the other two are going to be starting in August.
Karen, how many processes did we take out of?
We had approximately 60 steps in the process between the time when we're requested to generate an invoice and we actually get that invoice out, and we got it down to 9 steps.
Whoa.
So just really, it was an amazing process. And we will come back to the board with some information on this.
Are these all new grants then too? I mean, this is a new source for us.
Yes, so. It is. And unfortunately, I don't think the program's being renewed, so it was pretty great that we got in when
we were saying we got 2 more grants?
Yep, we got 3 in total. The seasonal and the accounts receivable. The fleet and the seasonal are going to be starting in August with Tri-C as the consultant on this project. Opportunity through the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, they actually have a program called the Cooperative Shooting Range Program. So we took advantage of that to transform the former York Road picnic area into a new archery range for our affiliates as well as for the public. So I don't know if the pictures really do it justice, but basically the old asphalt parking area was taken out, grass was planted, fences were put in, new targets were built, kiosks, the drive was refinished, so it's going to be a great new use of that space that was underutilized.
Can I ask just a quick question? It's probably more for Brian. Do we have a good safety policy on the archery range itself?
Without a doubt, absolutely. The safety record, they've been in Albion Woods for years. And one of the interesting things is that archery has grown so much, and the use of the facilities, there's a reservable in the back there. And on any given day, they're parking down at Bonnie Park and having to shuttle people up. And it was one of the products of great planning and the work that the Crooked River Archery Group had been doing, getting more youth involved. And we were able to see what Summit Metro Parks had done with their grant program. We added to it, and then we built this facility here. And so, yes, there is very good safety protocols.
So there's someone administering it, or is it self-administered?
It's really self-administered. I mean, it's open on certain days. There are competitions there. I mean, people that are planning for potentially bow season or other types of hunting activities or just for sport, this facility provides the protocols by which how they shoot, when they can walk up, when they can get their targets. We watched the whole process down at Summit, and it's a really impressive, safe process. We've also talked about adding a tower and doing some other things in the future, but this was a great repurposement of, you know, the asphalt had basically crumbled, and we've taken all of that out now and then provided this for a partner.
That's great. Thanks.
This one's actually even probably more safer because there's a designated area too for young folks, like off to the side, but it's only like 10 meter targets away from the farther ones. So there's some improvements in that level as well. Nature Works are another annual source. Again, you can apply by county through this program. So we received funds to fix Strawberry Pond, dredge Strawberry Pond, and add some fishing decks to make it a true family fishing area. And the Hinkley Reservation received some funds to put bridle trail bridges along the bridle trail to keep that trail from closing as well, to keep the horses out of the creek, which is better for everyone and the creek in the long run. The Ohio Environmental Protection Agency had a one-time opportunity to look at habitat restoration in the Cuyahoga River area of concern. So we applied to this source for money for design of the Northeast Pond at Acacia Reservation. So these plans were just completed in May by Sustainable Streams. This is the end design, so they're looking at doing some wetland fringe enhancements as well as daylighting the outlet structure. So the great thing about this is now those plans are ready to go whenever. The Ohio Environmental Protection Agency also has a pool of federal money I mentioned. This is the Section 319 program that looks at stormwater management and stream health. So we took this opportunity. Seneca parking lot was going to be repaved anyway, so we applied for funds to put stormwater management in it and received $144,000 to add bioswales as well as some permeable pavement and some detention areas. So the project is nearing completion. You can see the bioswales installed already in the parking area.
Is that a permeable parking lot as well?
The asphalt is not. There's a section on the one end, on the opposite end of the clubhouse that is, but that's just standard.
Is that a long-term goal or does it increase?
Well, you know, and Jim can speak to it. This has been Jim's bane of his existence early in the spring. But we've been working very diligently. We did a project at the zoo. We did a project at Marshall. Mm-hmm. And our goal is to continue to take parking lots off of, you know, adding load to the system. This is another example of where we partnered funds with some of the project we were going to do, turn it into something where the swales are taking the water off and there's a retention basin up the end before it goes into the soil. Jim, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, the permeable pavement area is permeable asphalt. It's on the very north end, which would be to the left of the picture, right where the arrow is. What we've done is we've isolated that, knowing that we could have potential problems down the road. We actually isolated that permeable pavement area. In case we do have issues with it, we don't have to rip up a bunch of area. The majority of the water goes into the bioswales. We're only dealing with, it's a 5,700 square foot permeable asphalt section that's only taking 8,000 square feet of drainage when you consider it's a 2-acre parking lot total. So it's a very, very small area. Yeah. The rest of it's routed through the bioswales into the retention facility where we treat it for water quality before discharging it.
Great.
But there is a permeable asphalt section.
Permeable asphalt. So we've done permeable pavers in the past. We've done permeable concrete in the past. We've never done permeable asphalt.
How does that work?
It has to do with the mix design. So it's a very sand mix with very large aggregate. I'm sorry, it's a low sand mix with very large aggregate that allows the water to seep through.
It's probably not very durable then.
I'm sorry?
It's probably not very durable as a paving surface.
All research that we've looked into in the other areas in Northeast Ohio that we visited, because there's the National Park has done quite a bit not far from Rexville.
How deep?
It's long-term, can be successful as long as it's maintained. The asphalt itself is 5 inches thick, and it's got a 2-foot deep reservoir of stone underneath it that the water actually sits in before it gets into the under drains and gets carried out.
It's been through winter yet?
Has not been through winter. We have actually not installed all permeable asphalt at Seneca yet. We had subgrade issues out there. We have the base course down, which is what you see now. I'm waiting for that to solidify up before we bring the trucks in to do the final course of asphalt. When they do the final course, they're going to do the permeable asphalt at the same time.
But others have done it, you said.
Absolutely, so yes.
2 feet's enough to me.
2 feet of stone underneath it with 5 inches of asphalt on top of that.
It's still meant 3.
Absolutely.
But that's a lot of asphalt and a lot of stone, isn't it?
A lot of stone.
It's got to be pretty expensive.
So the stone is not only the stone providing the structural base to support the asphalt, it's also providing the reservoir for the water to accumulate in and draw down slowly, which is the ultimate goal of the project.
Yeah. We do have an example of the Watershed Stewardship Center, both types of permeable surfaces, both concrete and asphalt.
That are driven on as well or not?
Pardon me?
Are they driven on, like cars?
It's on the path leading up to the back door, but it does get driven on, and it does get bladed with the stone, for snow.
The one thing you do have to be careful of is they don't recommend putting the asphalt in the aisleways of the parking lot. They recommend putting the permeable asphalt in the actual parking area to minimize load for delivery trucks, like ice trucks and stuff like that. But also, it's the turning of the wheels that can really damage the surface of it. Yeah. And that generally happens in the aisleways, not in the actual parking spots. So
stay tuned. I think it's working through. We've seen some successes and some challenges where some wouldn't do it again.
We're getting rid of a lot of that surface. That's a big deal.
This was also a new grant source for Cooper Metro Parks last year. This is the Fort Security Grant Program that was through the Department of Homeland Security. The goal is port security, to increase port security, and we were able to get a new Marine Patrol unit for the Ranger Department, which just arrived last week, actually, and I believe it's out at Edgewater now.
Ryan, let me ask a question. Does this mean now there are four enforcement groups on the lakefront of Cleveland? So you could get four chickens in one day from four different
agencies.
You got the City of Cleveland, you've got the Coast Guard, you've got the Metro Park, and you've got the Ohio State.
Oh, that's right, the state.
So I don't believe the City of Cleveland is providing any type of water support at this point in time.
They don't have a boat.
They don't have a boat. So it's Metro Parks, Ohio Department of Natural Resources, the Watercraft Division, and the Coast Guard Station. So there's only three. And it's really interesting, this process, to see. It's just literally been in the water over the weekend. They've already taken one boat off of the rocks at Euclid. With all of the waterfront that we manage, they convinced me that this was a very proper next step for Metro Parks. When you look at the activity of boating and how it's being dispersed and the properties that we manage on the waterfront between Huntington, through Rocky River, Emerald Necklace, Edgewater Yacht Clubs, Edgewater Marina, East 55th, and all the way down to the public boat launches. This is really, again, as we look at it, there are peace officers first. And so the goal is to make sure that we're managing expectations with jet skis and others. We have to provide tremendous amounts of fishing areas. And so it's a lot of education versus tickets, as you can see.
But would it be appropriate to ask the state of Ohio to take over their lakefront, their lakefront enforcement division? I mean, I would think that would be logical, less overlapping.
I think there's conversations that I think will continue in the future. I'm not so sure they're prepared to give up any type of jurisdiction yet. They built a new facility a number of years ago. we're developing those types of relationships across the board. The people that are sitting on this are from the Coast Guard, that are, you know, current Rangers. So, you know, again, we're working, working through all of those kind of collaborative agreements, I would say.
Getting to know you.
Did we go up the Cuyahoga River then, too?
They have the opportunity to go up the Cuyahoga River as well.
So we're dealing with that kind of voter safety and interaction.
Mm-hmm. They have, yeah, they can go anywhere.
So is the Cleveland police then, are they off the lakefront for good? Or are they, is it just because their boat doesn't work?
I can't say that they are providing it unless Dan would know something contrary to that. Their boat is from the
center. I couldn't speak to their future clients. I think when they're on the water, they're part of either a shared initiative or nothing at all. But the mission of that team is a lot different. I mean, the economy and city police, you know, from my understanding, they'll go all the way out to the border. They'll go how many miles out of the lake here. It's about Northern Border Patrol Initiative, really the basis for it. So it's really about homeland security and not about the services that your Metro Parks Rangers can provide for the National Police Dive and security in our ports and safety and that sort of thing, and pulling boats in the rocks. So I think of us as having, you know, the ability now, I'm sorry, I'm sitting both my left is full here, but think of us as having the ability to finally be able to do our police work and your public safety needs and the peace officer work that always seemed to stop right there when the water edge beat the
right
land. You know, we would often get to an emergency. It could be a drowning of a boat or something. We stopped. We don't have to stop anymore. So it was such a pleasure on day two to be able to help the family out, all the out by youth with financial order who was in peril, and to get there first.
Well, I think it's a really good objective for the Metro Park, but I think we ought to work hard to eliminate the overlap, because it's, to me, having four units of protection, and what it means is if everyone's responsible, no one's responsible. And I think it would be very wise for us to go to city council and to go to the governor and ask if we could centralize this a little more and incorporate those assets in what we're doing rather than having it spread out all over the place.
Can't we better coverage though if you have good coordination?
I mean, the answer is it's better to have one group in charge. Like I mean, like in traffic, having Ohio State Highway Patrol is helpful. But also, it's the municipalities that are really in charge of traffic, mostly. Like in your suburb, Bruce, you don't have the FBI doing police work, giving tickets. And you don't have...
No, unless they agree, they don't do
anything. But I mean, the point I'm making is let's make it efficient. It's part of being efficient.
Well, it sounds like we're working through all that, getting rid of the relationships established. At some point, I think if we have a proposal, mm-hmm. It really makes sense. Yeah. Coordinate.
It's good to have.
Yes.
And the last one that I was just going to touch on was through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, a little over $300,000 to do expanded detection and control of hydrilla, which is kind of the latest and not so greatest invasive species to enter Cleveland Metro Park. So these funds are to hire a hydrilla project coordinator and for some of the supplies needed to do detection and control throughout Cleveland Metro Parks, but also throughout the whole Cuyahoga River area. So that's it.
Very nice.
Thank you. Very good.
Very good update. The next and last one we have is the Grafton Correctional Institution Fish Breeding Program. A really unique program.
Yeah, it's
word. When it came in, I was just like, I don't think we've ever done something like this before, but I think there is a mutually beneficial when you hear Mike's presentation of why we got involved.
Well, I made the connection when I was incarcerated. So I am excited to give an update on this unique, as Brian noted, and mutually beneficial program. So it kind of all started with a letter to the zoo back in March 2015. The Grafton president of the inmate-led aquatics program inquired if they could possibly raise locally endangered stream and lake fishes for release in our parks. Chris Huhar sent it to my supervisor for us to field that one. So recognizing some pretty serious regulatory hurdles with dealing with protected species, even when they're not inmates in a prison, we suggested instead they might focus their efforts on sport fish to release in our public fishing areas instead. Upon their further research, they made what I think was a wise decision. Given their limited space environment, they decided to focus efforts on aquarium fishes, kind of the idea being, in some cases, a little tiny finger-length aquarium fish can fetch several fold more than even a large swordfish. So most bang for their buck, essentially. Kind of a neat component of this is they are coordinating with the local aquarium super center, and they are letting the inmates know where the current market is and demand for various fish species. Those are the ones they focus on. And during this initial period, we just kind of continue to offer technical advice as needed. So fast forward to this past February, the unit adjutant in chief at Grafton, Adam Castle, invited our staff to come see their program in action and meet some of the people involved, which we did. At that time, they had 30 fish breeding tanks housing a couple dozen different, again, in-demand species of fish in the aquarium market. At this point, they wanted to expand this program to a whole second facility, given its initial success, and they were in desperate need of more aquarium equipment. And this is not the only revenue-generating program at Grafton. They do all kinds of neat stuff, from gardening programs to training seeing eye dogs for the public. But any of these programs are required to donate just over half, or 51% of proceeds to a nonprofit. The idea being here with our involvement is that could be our fishing fund. So kind of just interested by our initial meeting, we decided to go ahead and So Kyle Lanzer, our park photographer, joined us when we visited Grafton. So I just included a few slides to kind of give you a feel for what we saw there, since none of you will probably ever be in prison. Their breeding room. In addition to the breeding tanks, there are inmate-maintained tanks in several office areas around the prison. The breeding operation, it's very impressive, very well run, very clean, very efficient. That's the inmate lead of the program. We're not allowed to show faces or give names of anybody involved, as you can imagine. So, give you a feel for what we saw when we were there. And in addition to the breeding tanks and the office tanks, there are inmate viewing tanks at several locations throughout the compound. These really facilitate a soothing and a therapeutic atmosphere, as evidenced by this inmate having his morning coffee while viewing one of these tanks. So, kind of spurred by our site visit and liking what we saw, we decided to give them help and try to put the call out for used aquarium equipment. We use social media, Facebook and our fishing blog, as well as word of mouth with target audiences such as the fishing community to solicit used aquarium donations. This, of course, was done with Carrie Cannenberg in the loop. And we had a really great immediate response from the public. We doubled the amount of aquariums in their program just during a short period, and since I put this presentation together, Cleveland State University's biology department is donating another 12 aquariums to us. Also, about 80 additional pieces of aquarium equipment, like hoods, stands, pumps, filters, they need anything and everything. I think it would be I want to just point out at this time that it sounds like a lot of work. Our investment in this was minimal. One site visit, that there is Owen, a seasonal employee. He's made only 3 visits back and forth to drop equipment off at Grafton. Most of this equipment is dropped off right at our doorstep by the donors, so that's easy enough for us. And of course, social media doesn't take more than a few minutes to put that word out. Conversely, on their end, during the same time period, they made the first 2 donations to our fishing fund. I know after seeing Chris, I wish I went before Chris, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but think of it this way. This is their first 2 investments in us as a partner. If all goes as hoped and expected, this will continue to occur every couple months for years to come. And especially when you think about it, we've helped double the expansion of their program to another facility. That's essentially doubled their revenue potential there. And one thing I think is really kind of neat and unique about this program as well is, if you think about it, both agencies involved benefit, the inmates' well-being benefits. In fact, a lot of the feedback I get from people donating aquariums is, it's really great Metro Parks is helping the prisoners. It's not about our fishing fund or fishing, so that's neat. But also, it's benefiting our local fishing community through the fishing fund. And it's even, to a degree, helping benefit local commerce in terms of producing locally raised, in-demand aquarium fishes raised at a reasonable price. I think this quote from the inmate in charge of the program kind of sums up one of their main motivations. They do want to redeem themselves and do some good. And fortunately, some of that good involves us, again, through the fishing fund. We can help facilitate public fish stocking. We can help carry out public fishing programs, especially for kids. So hopefully, I expect this to be a mutually beneficial partnership for years to come. So I kept it short and sweet. I don't know if anybody has any questions at this time. Be happy to answer them.
Pretty unique partnership. Again, I commend the staff for putting it together. It sounded a little like out of the box, but when you look at it, you know, the circle, yes, out of the tank. When you look at the full circle of what it provides back to the community, it's really providing a more, a greater benefit.
That's excellent.
So, thank you.
And most of our investment was right in the beginning. We're not going to do much from this point, other than cash checks, hopefully.
Very good. That was the last information briefing then. We have no old business.
Do we have any public comments?
It was refreshing last meeting to be joined by other citizens concerned about the direction of the parks. It is difficult for many who must mix work or rearrange schedules to attend. They raised important issues. Other problems involve difficulty in making reservations. What used to take a simple phone call now involves leaving a message which may or may not be returned. Some folks have arrived to find an area double booked or no record of their reservation. Beyond that, the requirement that apparently any group must have $1 million of insurance is absurd. Often these are not even organizations, just friends and neighbors who have gathered informally, sometimes for years. No fees, no dangerous activities, yet they are now excluded. No longer the people's park it was intended to be. But hey, mountain bikers can speed over the trails, training for their Metro Park sanctioned time trial races. No risk there. NeoCycle can take over Edgewater and hold events tearing up the landscape with no fees and no need to restore the damage. Commercial sponsors line their pockets and go home because they're part of the REC, WRECK community. Frankly, the lone golfer slicing balls in the riding field across the street is more dangerous than a water balloon fight. If it really is all about raising money, then quit with a food truck plan. 16 food trucks paying you to attend Edgewater Live is far more profitable. The Hay Project appears to be another loser. $30,000 to design a hay barn? You can build it for that kind of money. This is an open storage building, demanding only drainage, ventilation, and fire hydrants nearby. But grand prize for sticker shop of the month goes to the media buys. $200,000 in invoices for a mere 3-week period. More than a third of what Columbus Metro Parks, of comparable size, will spend all year. Granted, Cleveland Metro Park has a zoo. But these expenses didn't even include billboards and bus ads for tigers, or any print. Seems you have to advertise to bring people to all your scheduled events to make up for the everyday visitors you are now excluding. What a sad state of affairs as you approach the centennial. Thank you.
Brian, question. On the $1 million of insurance, when I was doing the Wendy Park, running Wendy Park, what we did is we had an insurance policy that basically blanketed that kind of stuff. So we didn't, if someone had a wedding at Wendy Park, we didn't have to get insurance. So that was and can't we do that? Because that's a big.
to without knowing how Marty is detailing her facts.
Yeah.
It's not a blanket situation. Depending on the type of event dictates what type of insurance. The normal family gathering does not require that, so she's construing the facts to a certain
degree. Okay.
So, you know, the normal family that's coming does not have that, but other events do need those types of things. The NeoCycle event was co-branded with Cleveland Metro Parks, bringing activity back
right.
to the lakefront.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, one person's opinion does not dictate how all of this is being laid out for the citizens of Northeast Ohio.
I think it would be helpful to understand what triggers a big insurance policy. It's how big you have to be to trigger that. Like if you have a function of 30 people,
Brian accurately stated,
okay.
for a regular family function, reserving a regular reserve vault, there's not that sort of insurance requirement. It's the special events.
Now, how about a company picnic?
Well, the company picnic would depend upon whether we're doing a special process here at the zoo or in a special venue.
Let's say a park, let's say a company picnic at Wendy Park, just to be made specific. Would that require an insurance policy?
Depends on whether they're playing amplified music, are they having other, I mean, there's a whole set of parameters by which we would have to check off whether they are or they are not. But in general, I mean, the normal family that is not. And then when you look at reservable sites versus non-reservable sites, we continue to provide access at no cost to the visitors of Cleveland Metro Parks.
No, but our mountain climbing, you know, the eclipse ledges, we do have some insurance requirements for those high risk activities.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? We are going to go into an executive session. Those of you who want to cover that for us?
Yes. Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of discussing acquisition or purchase of real property as well as to discuss some additional security issues?
So,
yes. Debbie Barry?
Yes.
Dan Moore?
Yes.
Bruce Finger?
Yes.
All right, our next meeting is Thursday, July 28th. We will come back to close out the meeting. You're welcome to say if you'd like to. We will want to take any action in our executive session.